Before we get started, try these three tools. First, 99designs, the largest crowdsourced marketplace for graphic designs. When I used them, I wrote a description of the design I needed and how much I wanted to pay. I got a bunch of designs back, I picked the one I liked best and only paid for that, and that design was customized to my needs. Try them for logo design, blog design, app icons, and more. 99designs.com. Next sponsor is Grasshopper. Entrepreneurs like me love and use Grasshopper because it offers all the features of the big expensive phone systems, you know the kinds, multiple extensions, music on hold, call forwarding, and so much more. But Grasshopper works with any phone system and it's inexpensive. Grasshopper.com. Finally, PickClick. It's a one-person startup by my friend Ryan in San Diego. His site gives you a visual way to search eBay, Etsy, and other sites. It's already profitable and it's bootstrapped. You gotta check out PickClick, PICCLICK.com. And tell me what you think. PickClick.com. Here's your program. Hey everyone, I'm Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. I've got an entrepreneur here that you guys have been requesting. I've gotten a lot of requests for you, Rashmi. Her name is Rashmi Sinha. She is the founder of SlideShare, which is the world's largest community for sharing presentations. And Rashmi, there are a couple of reasons why people have asked me to have you on. First of all, you keep growing. You've got 32.7 million unique users worldwide who are hitting your site. Numbers right?
Yes, that's right.
32.7 million unique. It looks like 52% of them come from off-site, from the widgets on other people's sites.
We get different proportions in different from different metrics. So that's something that I don't know. I'm not able to give you a specific answer for. We have like three methods of measuring, and all of them give a different percentage.
Okay. All right. So overall, every month, or at least last month, 32.7 million unique people hit the site. So that's one of the reasons. People want to know how you built this thing and how you keep growing it. The other reason, and I think I might have said this to you in an email, is I get a lot of requests for female entrepreneurs. When it comes to female entrepreneurs, for some reason, your name is at the top of the list. And so I've been trying to get more female entrepreneurs on here, and I said, I got to go to the woman who's at the top. You're either people's first choice or you're somewhere within their top five. So welcome to Mixergy.com.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me ask you this. I'm sorry?
Yes. No. Go ahead.
Before we even get into how you built up this company, I saw a quote on your website where you said men and women have different leadership styles and female leadership styles are underestimated, undervalued. I thought maybe we can talk a little bit about the issue that I'm having getting more women on Mixergy. Do you think it's that we're overlooking female entrepreneurs because they don't have what we expect to have, the characteristics we expect to have in founders?
I think there's a little bit of going on, but I mean, as I said in my blog post, I don't think it has to do with just women. I think it has to just do with the particular style of entrepreneurs that we look out for. But I also think that those stereotypes are definitely breaking. I mean, there was this article last week in the Daily Beast, I don't know if you took a look at it, about a number of women running social sites. So I think that as technology moves more into mainstream and into the hands of, you know, users who are not just, tech geeks, you will see more and more of different, you know, a wide range of profiles of entrepreneurs. And I definitely think that's happening.
What's the profile that we expect? What's that typical profile? Can you describe it?
So I would say, you know, I don't want to stereotype, and I will when I say this. So with that caveat, I think it's young, techie, geek, typically from a few universities, which we teens are very familiar with. So
young, techie, geek. Women can be young. They could be geeky. They could be techie. What are we missing? What about the female leadership style is different here?
Yeah, I know what I would want to. Yeah, I would prefer not to talk about what the stereotypes are, and I'd prefer to focus on, in general, let me tell you, you know, that was the only blog post I have ever written about being a woman entrepreneur. And I think there's a lot, and I actually kind of regret writing that blog post because ever since that, what has happened is that everybody just talks to me about that blog post, which I think is not what I want to focus on. I want to focus on SlideShare and how I built it. And I think ever since writing that blog post, I've decided that the first rule of women entrepreneurship is that you don't talk about it, you just do it. I do it with the style that I have, and I'm successful in doing it, and I'd love to share that. But I think I don't want to reflect on that too much. Instead, I just want to lead by example. I do it a certain way, watch that. I think discussing it at length is not what I bring to the picture. I bring to the picture doing it.
You know what? I agree with you 100%, and I love that attitude. And I would never have a male entrepreneur on here and say, "Can you tell me what it's like to be a male entrepreneur versus a female entrepreneur?" I would never even address it. And it's unfair for me, frankly, to put on your shoulders an issue that I've been wrestling with here on Mixergy, which is how to get more female entrepreneurs on. But I had to do it because it's an issue that I've been facing that my audience keeps trying to get me to correct, and I'm up for it. And I thought, you know what? I've got an opportunity, so I'll jump on it. What?
Fair
But
enough. That's
fair
fine.
enough.
That's fine.
Let's
Take
move
the
on and
stand.
I'll ask you about your personal leadership style. What is
Sure.
yours?
So my leadership style, you'd have to ask my team about it. But I think it's fast. I'm impatient. As a person, I'm impatient. I'm fast. I'm always dreaming up different things. I think I'm nurturing as a leader, I try to really look out for my team and what they are doing and how to best help them grow. In terms of I'm really, in terms of CEO styles and founder styles, I see people who fall into different camps. Some people are sales CEOs, some people are marketing CEOs, they're excellent at marketing the product. I'm probably a product CEO. I get the product. I live, breathe, and think about it all day long. And I leave with my British vision for the product. So that's, I guess, in a nutshell, what my leadership style is.
Okay, I want to go through your biography here, starting a little bit with what you did before SlideShare and spending a lot of time on SlideShare. And then I'd like to come back throughout the interview and ask you about how being fast has played a role or how you've developed the product so that we can see these
Sure.
characteristics within the context of the business. So, from what I saw, before you launched SlideShare, you were really into user experience. Am I right there?
Yes, absolutely right.
How'd you come to get interested in user experience?
So I have an unusual path to SlideShare. So I actually have a PhD. So I'm highly educated, over-educated, as I often say. And my PhD is in cognitive psychology and cognitive neuropsychology, to be specific. So I was very interested. I've always been very interested in how people think, how people respond to things, what are the cognitive processes going on. And from that, I jumped into human-computer interaction. And I was at UC Berkeley working on search system, recommender interfaces, and kind of taking the approach of when you're building great products or great systems like this, you really need to think about the user at the other end. So I did that at UC Berkeley for a little while and worked with, people like Marty Hurst, Hal Varian at the School of Information. I loved the work. I hated the pace. And I suck at writing academic papers, and I don't like the slow pace of research. And so I decided that, I'm going to do this, but in a different context. So I started consulting. I left UC Berkeley, I started consulting. And I worked with companies like eBay, Blue Shield, helping them with their user experience. So they kind of got started with that, enjoyed the work. And then we founded our first company, Mind Canvas. Yuzanto, that's the name of the company, and Mind Canvas, that's the product. And the product had to do with game-like surveys. The essential idea was that survey technology leads to a very boring HTML form-filling experience, and why can't you make it more like a game? And if you look at a lot of today's software, it also has to basically reimagine more prosaic software as games. So that's what we were doing with Mind Canvas. We launched it, we had some success with it. We were doing quite well. We were selling it to companies like Microsoft and Yahoo. It was a B2B product. And then the same team came up with the idea for SlideShare, my co-founder, John Buttel. who I don't know if you know is also my husband. So we founded SlideShare together.
Oh, I didn't realize
You
he was your
might know.
husband. I saw a lot of links from your tweets and blog. I just didn't realize you guys were married. Okay.
Yeah, we don't, you know, if people know us, they know about it. We don't make a big deal of it. And, you know, people don't find out till the time they look closely. So we had founded UserEnter together, was doing well. And then John came up with the idea for SlideShare.
Actually,
And
before
we
we go
essentially.
into SlideShare, let's just stop right here. I want to dig into what we've said so
Sure.
far. My curiosity is, Rashmi, why user experience? If you were to tell me sales, I'd want to know what about the sales process you loved. And I could tell you that for me, it's a validating experience. Every time somebody buys from you, it's almost like they're buying you. I'd love to know what personally. Can you get that personal about user experience and tell me why you care about it, why you're so passionate?
Because I think it has to do with both in general with with technology and the stage it's at. I truly believe technology is at the stage where it's going to these masses, and that's what's happening. I look at the numbers for Facebook, and when you imagine what these web products can be, how they can be used by people who are not techies at all, then I think you do have to think about the design, the user experience, the people behind, what they would expect. And a lot of, like, I think the social startups in the last few years have essentially, you know, they've taken technologies which were already there. I mean, YouTube, in terms of technology, was not that new. What was new about it was that that made that experience something that could virally grow and everybody would find enjoyable and everybody would love. So I really see this as a stage in what's happening in terms of the, you know, web. And that's the reason why I think having a design background and thinking about design is useful. It's not just me, by the way. Go back and look at some of the social startups. So one of the people who started YouTube was Chad Hurley, and I'm pretty sure that Chad Hurley did design at PayPal and eBay, if I'm not wrong. That was his background. Look at Flickr. They had a very strong design aesthetic, and you know the founders cared about design. So I think this is the many of the larger social sites, some of the founders or some of the the first few people have cared about design, and that's pretty important.
Okay, and you brought up a couple of names of companies that you worked with before. You said eBay. Can you give me an example of how you helped eBay and maybe how you helped
Sure.
one other company?
Sure. So the project we did for eBay was actually really interesting. We worked with them on the information architecture of the entire site. So they'd never had someone come and think about how we have these, these millions of pages literally, and how you organize it all together. It had grown in a very, just different parts of the site had grown organically, and we were helping them, and it was very confusing for a new user who would come in to find their way around the site and to know where to go next. So we did some mental models, user research to really understand what how users of different types saw eBay, and then how do you marry that with the business needs and put together an architecture that works for both. An information architecture. I'm not talking about technical architecture.
I see.
So that was one of the projects we did for eBay. For Blue Shield, I worked for several projects, which was really about making health insurance information understandable by end consumers. And it is really tough. And we always talk about it. The health insurance industry is in general needs a lot of help and changes. And the project we did work with them on was really about making that information easily findable, knowing what applies to you and how you can navigate
How
and
did you
find
do
a great
that?
plan.
Can you be specific about that? I'm curious, and I can only understand things, I think, in concrete examples, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Glad to. So we did that by doing some user tests. So we would watch people, we would create a bunch of tasks and watch people trying to use that. So what I think I do nowadays with usertesting.com for SlideShare, where I just create tasks and watch people, we were doing that in person and trying to understand that. And from that, really using that information that we got from users themselves to come back and say, this is the way the information needs to be redesigned.
I see. So you bring people into the office and you say, here's a one job that somebody might want to do on our website. Can you do it for me so I can watch you? And then you watch how they interact and you see where they stumble, and where they stumble is where you need to improve the design.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that essentially what you're doing now at SlideShare, or how have you changed it?
So, it's interesting. We just started doing user tests for the first time in 3 years of FlightShare. It was just like, last month that we did our first user test. And I talk about the fact that I did this for a living before SlideShare, and I hadn't done it till now for SlideShare. I think the reason being that social sites, once again, they have a very different, a very close relationship with their users in a way that these large organizations that I worked with do not. SlideShare, I know a lot of the top users personally. I email with them. If they have a problem, they don't write to tech support. They write to me, or they tweet a message at me saying that, hey, I can't get this to work. So we have a very, and that really helps us getting feedback in a very direct manner that we can react to. And we've done this from day one, is that the founders and the team members, everybody was on the web. We were talking to people. We understood what they want, and we built it. What happens, I think, as companies grow is that there's too much information. And everybody in the team is getting all these different sources of information. And at that point, user tests allow you to structure that information and get it in a form that you can, immediately digest and start acting, making recommendations on. So I think it's been an interesting kind of path for us, whereas for 3 years we didn't do any user tests, and now we are starting with them.
And when you say user tests, are you still bringing people into the office and having them perform tasks so that you can watch how they do it?
We've done that a few times, but we've mostly been doing using usertesting.com, where you just input, a task and your URL, and people go and try to do that, and you can watch a video of them trying to do that. So it's fast, simple, and we might build a feature one day, and then we write up a test, and we watch next day what happened. The team watches. So I find it a great way to get immediate feedback for things we are doing.
I keep hearing about usertesting.com here on Mixergy interviews. I think the founder of the company is one of my viewers because at one point he sent me his website and asked me to take a look at it. But it's amazing to just keep hearing it over and over and over, and it's pretty inexpensive too, right?
It is pretty inexpensive, and I think it's great for the kind of direct feedback it gives you, because you build something and then you sit and cringe when people can't use it. And no amount of what feedback I can give to the team can replace that. That experience of, like, we all sit and watch it together, and like when you sit and watch it together and you see, and you're like, oh God, we need to fix this. So it's awesome.
Okay, let's continue then with the story. I want to spend a little bit of time on Mind Canvas. You're right, I keep hearing about the value of surveys, but I also don't fill out a lot of them personally because they take a lot of time. How did you reinvent or how did you change the survey taking process to get more people engaged?
So, Mind Canvas was really about what we called game-like methods. And it was more about, it was less about the kind of surveys that you typically see, where you are like, okay, what is your gender and what is your age, and five demographic questions and things like that. It was more about how do you think. So, for example, let me give you an example of the type of things we did with Mind Canvas. So if you want, suppose eBay is redesigning its site, you could take a series of, say, 100 tasks that people can do on eBay, and then ask people to sort them into groups. And through that sorting, you can understand the mental models that people have about a website domain, and then use that to design something. So that's what those were the type of methods we were using with Mind Canvas. And it was both the nature of the task. We were really trying to replace paper technology. The kind of tasks that we address with Mind Canvas have never been done on the web, because they're really the interface. Now I'm starting to see a few like that, but the interface is really complex. So you really want this paper-like ease of experience where you can sit and sort and group and name. So those are the type of things we were doing with
I
Mind
see. So
Canvas.
instead of check boxes and putting numbers next to items, you might have them be a little more interactive and move items around in a list and adjust that way. How did the game mechanics fit into it?
We looked a lot at PopCap games. I don't know if you've played PopCap games. I love them. We would look at them. Bejeweled is a PopCap game.
Ah,
So we
Bejeweled,
would look
okay.
at,
Then I have
yeah,
played
that's,
them.
I don't play a lot of games, but there's a few I play, and they've had a tremendous influence on the way I think. So we looked at a lot of them, how you give constant feedback to people in a very low ambient fashion. passion that they can just know what to do next, how to keep them engaged, how to give them reinforcement for completing the task.
So how did you do that? How did you give them reinforcement?
You know, we had some positive game mechanics built into Mind Canvas, whereas people, you know, we would say that, oh, great, well done, now you can move on to the next. So, you know, your typical thing, if you're interested, read Amy Jo Kim's presentations on SlideShare. She does just a brilliant job of dissecting
Not only
that.
did I look at that and link to it from her interview, but when I interviewed her and she talked about it, she was one of the best interviews. People keep thanking me for having her and want her back on. She was phenomenal. You're right.
So she is brilliant, yeah. Like I refer to her presentations very often.
Okay, so let's move on then. You say that it was your co-founder, your husband, who had the idea for the business. What was the original germ of an idea?
The original germ of an idea was at a bar camp.
So at a bar camp?
Correct,
okay.
Yes. SlideShare. So it was, you know, the way it worked was really interesting. He was at a bar camp and he was watching. He was kind of one of the organizers of the bar camp. So people were coming to him with all the media. And he was watching while, you know, people were uploading to Flickr, the pictures to Flickr, and the videos to YouTube, and for embedding into the wiki, the Barcamp wiki. So he's like, well, you know, let's find the site for uploading PowerPoint, and then we'll embed the PowerPoint into the wiki. And he kept on searching, and he couldn't find it. So he came back, and he told me and our third co-founder, he's like, you know what, there's nothing of this sort. And this is April 2006. Somebody's going to do this, and it makes a lot of sense. And he used to keep on pitching his ideas. He's an ideas guy. I'm not the ideas person here. I sit down and I take an idea and then I make it, you know, come alive. But I don't have all the different ideas like he does. And he used to keep on pitching us ideas, but this was the first idea that we immediately agreed that this made sense, you know, that somebody was going to do it. There was no way to share Office files on the web so far. And that it was just like its time had come, it made sense. So we immediately started executing on it. This is March or April 2006, actually. We over the summer, he along with an intern, what was Usando is now SlideShare, wrote the first version. We started giving it out to a few friends by say July, August. And it was fascinating how people would use it in a slightly broader way than we had expected. People were uploading artistic PowerPoint and all sorts of different things. We just thought of conferences so far. And, we found a source to Michael Arrington through one of our advisors, Ross Mayfield, and Michael wrote about us on October 4th, 2006. That was a launch. We didn't do anything else. That's all we did. And SlideShare just took off. Pretty much, it immediately took off, you know, and after that, we just, as I like to say, in a sense, we follow SlideShare. You know, it just has a mind of its own and it keeps growing. So,
I'm gonna write that down so I can come back to that line. We follow SlideShare. I want to make sure to have a few follow-ups on that. But let's go back to something you said earlier. You said that you guys used to have a lot of ideas and you thought that this was the one that had legs. Can you describe some of the ideas that you had before? I always think that's fascinating.
So we had a team in India at that point, and often we would think about, you know, we had thought about a Craigslist in India. We felt that, you know, there was somebody who was going to build that. Turned out that, you know, hundreds of people tried to build that, and the market just became kind of bifurcated. What were the other ideas? You know, we thought of some B2B software, which was like, but what we really wanted to do was something large, something on the web, of course, but and also social, to kind of take advantages of what we had learned. We thought of taking on SurveyMonkey because we had a background in survey software and we felt, you know, that would be another thing that we could do. But we just weren't excited about building a software like SurveyMonkey. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think SurveyMonkey is awesome, but that didn't make the team want to really work on it. So those are the kind of ideas that we were thinking about.
I see. So you were looking to see where the market opportunity was and what got you excited. And here you saw an opportunity because nobody created a way to share Office documents. And it was something exciting for you because it's something you needed. Now, you said something earlier, too. You said there's nobody who's allowing sharing Office documents online. But you specifically started out focusing on PowerPoint, on slides. And that Michael Arrington article that you talked about said that it was four slides, and the company is called SlideShare. Why limit yourself to PowerPoint in the early days?
For a few reasons. A, I think it's really, really important for a company to be definable in one sentence. And it's, I mean, office documents are united in this creation software, in this how to edit office documents, but the way they get used and who they get used is very different. Excel is used by a different class of people than PowerPoint is. I mean, there's some overlap, but I'm just saying overall, you know, like they have very different usage patterns. And we really saw SlideShare at that point as being for conferences. So, you know, we thought that the reason that people would want to share is because they want to share their PowerPoint with the world in a way that they did not want to share Word files or Excel files. So, and we wanted to define ourselves in a specific manner. So that's what we wanted to focus on to start off with. And now, even though we accept Word files and we have become much broader, I think it's easy for people to know what SlideShare is. And in your, this is an interview, your audience is entrepreneurs. So I'd focus on that, is that it's really important to be able to define yourself, even if that makes it narrow, because you need to occupy a space in people's minds. People need to know what you are about and be able to differentiate you from everybody else. And people can do that with SlideShare. And we didn't, I mean, I'd love to say that we were brilliant enough to know this right from the beginning, but we were not. We had the concept, but it was really like Michael Arrington called us the YouTube of PowerPoint, and we used to cringe at that. We were like, no, we're not so derivative. Like, we have our own ideas. But we would watch how people's faces would immediately have this recognition if we ever heard anyone else describing it. And so we started saying it too, because it was the easiest, fastest way to get the point across. And that's what you care about.
You know what? I feel, I keep hearing about how Michael Arrington, while he's, what I was going to say was, I feel like somebody in the tech industry, I'm supposed to dislike Michael Arrington. But the more I do interviews here, the more I see that he can sum up an idea quickly. He wasn't involved in your business the way you guys were, but here he was summing it up in a couple of words that helped other people understand it. He could do that, and he's done it so many times for the companies that I've interviewed here. What was your original way of describing what SlideShare was? Today we use the phrase world's largest community for sharing presentations. What was it back then?
It was about sharing PowerPoint, yeah, like the slide share. Think about the word.
But do you remember that? Did you have a quick sentence that explained it perfectly like
no,
that?
No,
it took a while.
And we had, we probably had this long, awkward way of describing what we were trying to do, how big the idea was in our heads. You know, I mean, that's the thing with entrepreneurs. You know, they're sitting there, they're dreaming up things, and they, you know, the ideas in their head, they're trying to get it across, and it often takes somebody else to describe it in a succinct manner that everybody will get. So I'm not going to say that we had a great way of describing it before that.
What about the first version of the product? I'm always fascinated by what that first version looked like. What did yours look like?
So our first version was really, really basic. Our first version basically allowed you to upload a file and to get an embed code and to, you know, use that embed code. That's really all it was. A lot of the social hooks weren't there. A lot of what you see now, slide casting, all those things weren't there. And in fact, when we were first building it, we thought of making it even more basic. But then as we start having people, you know, upload and test it out in the alpha phase, we realized we needed to make it embeddable. So we did all that. So when it launched, SlideShare allowed, it served a very need. So I would say that the evolution of SlideShare has been really interesting, is that right at the beginning, the now when people use it because it gets them a lot of traffic to their content, and it's a way of getting ideas out into the world. That wasn't the case when we started. When we started, it was a utility for uploading and sharing your PowerPoint. So people would upload their presentations, take it back to the blog. They didn't even care that it was on SlideShare. They just cared about it being on their blogs. But then after we had kind of a critical mass of, you know, presentations in the first few months, what started happening was that people started noticing that they were getting a lot more traffic on SlideShare than on their blogs. B, when they came there and they browsed and they searched, they would find a lot of relevant content. So those were the two ways that we really started growing towards what SlideShare has become.
Did you have a user account back then? Did you require one in order to upload?
we didn't just require a user account to upload. We were, I mean, I would say like we made the mistake of actually requiring an invitation. So if you go back and you think about the mistakes you made, you know, that was the first and the biggest mistake that we made was that when we launched, we were watching how this effect of like TechCrunch effect where these sites would like, you know, basically collapse under the weight. And we were nervous about it. So we put together, we had an invitation system. And I think looking back at the traffic charts, that's what retarded our growth. I mean, we grew fast, but we would have grown faster if not for that invitation system. So we required a lot of things. In fact, when we launched at 4 in the morning on October 4, 2006, we'd been told it would be 6 a.m. Of course, we thought it would be PST, not realizing when press people talk, they always talk in EST. So it launched 2 hours earlier than we thought it would be. So we were all scrambling. And the first thing we had to build was that we had these invitation screens, which would show us all the people who were trying to get in. And we had to build a check all so that we could invite them all. Because essentially, the whole team is sitting there trying to let people in because we have this invitation system. And that was my idea, so I take full ownership of that. That stupid thing we did right in the beginning.
So let me see if I understand it. Somebody would have come from that Michael Arrington post to your website and wanted to try uploading a file. Instead of being able to upload, they would see and enter your email address to request an invitation form. Then you would have to, but that seems okay. I guess I've seen it work for some people. You end up capturing email addresses, you end up being able to reach out to people who don't sign up and asking them why they didn't sign up. But in your case, it slowed you down. And in your case, I guess it was redundant because you already had an account. So when somebody wanted to upload, they needed an account anyway, and that's where they would give you the email address.
I mean, we had a working site. Yeah, we didn't launch with just a demo or a beta where you have to get the site isn't working. We had a working site. In looking back, what is the worst thing that could have happened? The worst thing that could have happened would we would have been down for a few hours, and then we would have scrambled back up and got right back up and taken all the people, and the people would have been like, "Oh, this site launched and it was doing so well that it collapsed." I mean, so the fear was completely misplaced. So I would say that any of the stupid things that I have done in the course, a lot of them have been when I've been afraid. And that's one thing I have learned is that never be afraid. Just go ahead and do it. And if it's incorrect, if it's wrong, you'll withdraw from it, you'll change it. If you move fast enough, you'll have time to change.
You said that's a great statement. You've said earlier that we follow SlideShare, but you didn't have the social hooks in place at the time for people to go from SlideShare viewers to SlideShare creators. How did the site take off after that initial post?
So it took off because I was, coming back to what I was saying about it being a utility. Yes, we did not have the social hooks. We did not have virality in place at that point. But SlideShare was the best and the only way at that point to get a PowerPoint on the web. And we hit a real market need. So right on day one, all these people are uploading and, they are going back immediately to their blogs. On their blogs, the one thing we do have working is the small link at the bottom right, which says view on SlideShare, which brings them back to SlideShare. It's kind of this advertisement for SlideShare the whole web over. And the funny thing is, on day one, we had just a wide variety of content uploaded. We had some sermons uploaded. We never knew before that there were PowerPoint sermons. That was, I learned something. We even got some porn uploaded, which we promptly deleted. So turns out there's PowerPoint porn. And we even had some one person upload like a confidential company document, not realizing it was public. And we immediately emailed them and we were like, "Hey, did you not realize this is public?" So it was fascinating the kind of content that immediately got on the system. So I think the utility part of it was so strong. That's why we grew in spite of not being set up for virality.
I see. What are some of the early social hooks that you put in place to bring even more people to the site?
So the social hooks that we started putting in place were the sharing, the sharing by email, which is still very strong in spite of, now it's more about Twitter and Facebook, but email sharing is still really large. So the two ways were really about the embed and people coming back from the embed to the site. and the other way is through email that they were sharing with each other.
What share of social comes from email versus Twitter and Facebook?
So out of social right now, probably about 25% still comes from email.
25 from email. Wow. Okay. So it's still strong, but I would have expected even stronger. And then 75 is Facebook, Twitter, and the other social sites.
Yes, and remember for us the embeds also play a big role. They still play a big role. So that's the social traffic that we have.
Did you have an embed button on the original widget that people could embed on their website?
Yes, we did. So
Okay.
embedding was we built it for people to embed it. Yeah. So the basic use case that we built it for was someone who wanted to, instead of putting a link to a PowerPoint file on your blog, you embed it on your blog. That was the basic use case.
But if I saw it on somebody else's blog, can I click a button to grab the embed code and then add it to my site? Or did I need to know to go to SlideShare and then grab it from there?
I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think it was that easy to grab it there, right there at that point. So you were not smart enough, socially smart enough.
Excuse me. And it launched on SlideShare.net, right?
Yes, it did
Why?
launch on SlideShare.net because we loved the name, and the .com was taken by some other company. And remember, we were doing this on a lark. Yeah, we had like 2 or 3 months of development time. We already had a product, so we were kind of testing out ideas. So we said, you know what? We love the name. We'll just go for it. And then at we had to buy .com. That was still the big single largest purchase that we have made, and it still makes me, go back and think about we had to spend so much money to get the .com.
Because you did it after you got funding and after you got a higher profile.
We did it after we got a higher profile, but we did it after we got funding, but we very carefully hid the fact that we'd gotten funding while we were negotiating for the domain because we knew the price would go up. So we had like this whole process of trying to get the domain and not revealing that we'd been funded. So in fact, we had to delay the announcement of the funding because we had to accomplish this one thing before we could talk about it. So.
And someone, Scott Carlson in the audience, is saying dot com still goes to dot net. It gets redirected. That's because of SEO reasons, right? You don't want to. Actually, why is that?
So, .com worked, any URL worked, so both work. The funny thing is that when we got .com, we had thought that our users would care, and they didn't care. A lot of people said, you know what, I thought from the .net that you guys were really about being a community, that's what the .net implied to them. So we were like, you know what, this is our identity at this point in time, and if people say .com, we are fine with that, but the core site, we will not change anything. So we just kept it that way.
At what point did you get funding?
We got funding about a year and a half into SlideShare. Coming back to the history of SlideShare, remember we were another company that had launched the side project that took off. And it took us about 6 months to decide and to see the fast pace at which SlideShare. At first, we could just fund it ourselves because we were profitable with the other company. But then SlideShare growth started growing too fast for us to keep up. Secondly, although Mind Canvas was a great product and a lot of people loved it and found it very useful, Mind Canvas did not have the reach of SlideShare. It was never going to have the reach of SlideShare. And we all basically fell in love with SlideShare, the whole team. And it became kind of a pain as to who was going to work on Mind Canvas because we all wanted to work on SlideShare. So it was at that point, it was in May of 2007, that we actually went and formed the company. So we didn't even have a entity called SlideShare. So we made that entity and made almost a year after SlideShare has been founded, it's been launched. And then we got some angels on board, angels like Dave McClure, Mark Cuban, Hal Varian, Jonathan Abrams, and pretty much all of the angels were people who were using SlideShare. So that's how we met Mark Cuban. He was using SlideShare. Dave McClure, because he was using SlideShare. And within 2 or 3 months of that, we closed Series A.
How did Dave, actually, why don't we talk about Mark Cuban? How did Mark Cuban go from being a user to being an investor?
So it was really interesting. So he'd been using SlideShare pretty much from the beginning, if I remember correctly. And I think at one point we had just emailed with him and he said, yeah, I like the site, etc. And then when we started thinking about doing the angel round, we emailed him and we said, you know what, this is what we're doing. This is what our plans are. Are you interested? And I don't think he even replied to us. We just next heard from his funding guy. You know, he's got a guy who manages his investments, and then he made the investment basically. So it was very simple.
Oh, and you knew then that he was using the site when you emailed him?
Yeah. Yes. So he was emailing the site. So we emailed him saying that, hey, we've noticed you're on the site, you know, and we're also looking to, you know, now grow bigger and get raise some funding. And he was like, yeah, that's interesting, you know. But he didn't really ever talk to us. He just had his investor management guy come and talk to
To
us.
this day, have you talked to him?
Not me. John is the main contact with him. Yeah.
Okay. Guy Kawasaki, I noticed, was an advisor, not investor. How did you get him on board?
So I met Guy at a conference pretty soon after the launch of SlideShare, and he, you know how he's a big person, you know, in presentation world. He's like big into PowerPoint. He's written many articles about it, critiquing it too, but like, you know, also as a user. And he spoke to me and he said, you know what, I've always wanted to do a PowerPoint contest. So that's how he got involved, is that he gave the idea of the PowerPoint contest, which is what we ended up building into the world's largest presentation contest, which we do every year, which is upcoming in a few months. And that kind of became our flagship event. It defined us, you know, all the presentation creators participate in it. And then a few months after he'd been, so he was the judge for the contest. He helped me line up more judges for the contest. And then I said, you know, you want to be an advisor. So he said yes, thankfully.
I see. So you reached out to him and asked him if he wanted to help out, or he reached out to you? I didn't catch that part.
I met him at a
I
conference.
see. Right. Okay. And then he said, "I have this idea for a contest. Do you want to participate?" You guys put the contest on together. When you asked him to be an advisor, what was your vision for him in the company?
So a few things. A, I think Guy is just brilliant at marketing, you know. And when you speak to him, and something I love about him, so for SlideShare, we were always thinking about, are we for these expert presentation creators or are we for the masses? And Guy is a man who understands the masses, how to appeal to large, you know, groups of users, and really he helped focus it in a way that it was much more for the masses, I think, which is what we wanted anyway. So I loved the kind of ideas in working on the contest with him. I clearly saw, I mean, he's brilliant at coming up with marketing ideas. And especially in the field of presentations, he's really well known. People respect what he has to say. So I think from an overall perspective, he fits SlideShare very well.
Do you have an
Which is like,
example of how he helped you market to the masses, one of his ideas that you've used?
so I would say in the contest, which he had a very big role to play with in how we made the contest, and the contest has been pretty important to SlideShare in terms of defining what the site is about, is that we were thinking about what the topics for the contest would be, and we had some pretty narrow ideas, you know, we would specifically, and he was the one who convinced us to just open it up. Any topic, anyone can participate. The rules, the way that the voting happened, anybody can vote, just like have a really broad open contest. So I think that particular kind of way of appealing to users in this very open way was a guy helped me think through it.
And how
And
did
even
you?
now,
I'm sorry, even now?
I said, even now, if I have a question, I like, you know, email him, and his perspective is always very interesting.
How'd you get people to participate in that first one?
How did we get people to participate? It was by that time we understood virality, and you know, when we launched it, I think the launch announcement itself, we had the top judges in the presentation field, you know, Guy Kawasaki, Nancy Duarte of Duarte Design. We had the presentations and Gar Reynolds from presentations, and all these people are extremely well known in the presentation field. So when we announced the content, people were already impressed by that. You know, they were like, oh, this is somewhere where I will get my slides be looked at by Gar Reynolds. You know, that's a big deal in the presentation field. So that was helpful. And then also the contest voting was very viral. When people would vote, others would find out and join. So overall, I think we ended up the first time with about 3,000 entries. And not only that, the top entries were absolutely brilliant. And even today, I think a lot of the people who were the winners have ended up making their careers out of, you know, the kind of recognition they got and built businesses, you know, at least it's helped their business a lot.
So I've got a few list of characteristics here that we talked about in the beginning of the interview.
Sure.
You said you were the product person, and I see that throughout the interview. But you also said that you're fast and impatient. I haven't seen an example of that. How did that come into play?
Well, I am fast and impatient by nature. You know, when I speak so fast that people tell me to slow down. If I give talks, the biggest feedback I get is slow down, slow down. So I think in terms of the speed at which we move, and you know, just in the way that we started SlideShare, and actually sometimes I'm slower than some of the other members of my team, so I'm fast, but maybe not fast enough. I've really learned to value the importance of speed. Because if you can do the same thing in 3 weeks or in 3 months or maybe even in 3 years, and if you get the product out in the hands of users and you start getting feedback and learning to iterate on it, you move, you learn so much more, you don't waste technology. So I'll tell you the biggest lesson we had. The first product we built, Mind Canvas, we built it in a year and a half. And we took it to market and we realized only about 20% of the features were really being used. So it was successful, but we wasted almost 60% of what we struggled to build, you know, and we're getting the details right, everything we did. That was a real lesson to us in the, you know, when we started with SlideShare. We launched it in 3-4 months. Yeah, we built it, we launched it, we learned from it, we kept on iterating on it. And that has come to define the way that we work at SlideShare, is that we don't, you know, sit on an idea for a long time. We take an idea, we decide, okay, we are going with it or not going with it. We decide what a, you know, now what we will call a minimum viable product is, and then put it out in the market, see how people react to it. And the hardest part is throwing it away if it's not working. And it is really hard. I mean, there are team members who've, you know, worked hard on it, who love it, but you have to throw it away if it's not working and, you know, keep on iterating if it is.
Do you have an example of something you threw away?
What did we throw away? So we had this way of what we called Zing, which was really, you know, derived from the DIG model of voting things up and down. And we had that for a while, and it was clearly not working. On SlideShare, there is an element of voting, but the votes occur through social sharing, through you know, how much traffic something gets, how many favorites, how many comments. So we already have that into the site. Now you're trying to create this artificial way of doing that. We had that on the site for a while. Nobody got it. Nobody used it. We threw it out, you know, and removed the code. So that's an example.
Let's see what else I've got here. I wanted to come back and talk to you about Never Be Afraid. That's been coming up a lot. Was there a time where you had to say, hey, stop being afraid, go for it? Or was it an example of how you conquered it that you can share with us?
So I was giving you the first example. You know, the first fear we had was that of scalability. You know, that we thought that if our site gets too many hits, it will go down. And I mean, in retrospect, hindsight is 2020, but you know, you look back and you're like, well, so what? If we had gone down for a few hours, we would have scrambled. We were built on Amazon services. We would have just, you know, fired up more computers and we would have handled it. As opposed to retarding the pace of growth, you know, what's worse? So I realized this, you know, there's not all the decisions I can share publicly, but there've been times when we've made a decision. And when we make a decision based on fear, it's the wrong one. That's just something that I have learned in such a clear fashion, that you cannot make, you know, if entrepreneurship, building startups is about, you know, doing what is, you know, the hard things, what you think might fail, and just not being afraid and going and doing it anyway. And I'm not saying do it not in a thoughtful way, but you really have to let go of the fear. This is not like a job.
Do you have an example of a time when you were going to get stalled by it, but you overcame it?
Let me think about it. Okay, so this is about a feature that we are building right now. So it's on the top of my mind, but I can't tell you what it is. So I'll describe it, and I know it's going to be a little bit unsatisfactory because I can't tell you what it is. But we're working on a big feature right now, and it's really hard not to release it in a real MVP fashion. It is, Eric Ries, who we are very inspired by, talks a lot about MVP, and I believe in it. But it is actually takes a lot of discipline to release things when they're completely untested and when they embarrass you. And it is so much easier to release things when they are refined and you're not embarrassed and you know that people won't write emails to you and tell you, hey, this is completely half-baked. So letting go of that fear of those emails and people telling you that, this is half-baked and saying that, yes, half-baked is a strategy. Not half-baked in a way that, it's going to be a terrible product, but I mean, like, we are deliberately putting things out when it's not completely fleshed out. So letting go of that fear has been a big deal, and helpful, I think.
Yeah, half-baked is a strategy is a great line. Social hooks. What are some of the most effective social hooks that you've had? We talked about embed, we talked about email. What else has worked really well?
So, the thing that works really, really well on SlideShare is favoriting. So, and the reason I really like favoriting, even though it's less about virality, it's more about engagement within the site. The reason I like about it is that it's a genuine social gesture. It's never used for spam. So people will write, there are spammers who will come to the site and write 100 comments just to get links back to their site. But nobody ever spams favoriting. It's like if you go and favorite somebody's presentations, you genuinely mean it as like, I like this, I enjoyed this, thank you for sharing this. And it's a very, it basically gives positive reinforcement to the content uploaders and makes them feel more attached to SlideShare. So overall, it's a feature that has helped us really, grow into a community. The SlideShare community is not built on top of comments the way that some other communities are. It's built on top of these engagements with each other, favoriting being one of them. So that's one feature that I really like. I think our the Twitter integration, which by now is commonplace, but we started doing it pretty early on. We got our Twitter integration exactly right. That we try to keep
How
abreast of.
did you get it exactly right at the beginning? Or what was it like in the beginning?
So, I mean, this was about a year ago, year and a half ago. So, I mean, the whole when you say tweet this and you come up with you've done the Twitter integration, so you come up with a Twitter window with a message that says that check out the SlideShare presentation. Each word in that message is very carefully thought through, and we watch. What we want is for people to engage with each other. We also want SlideShare name in there, so we think carefully about every element of that. And by now, it's commonplace, so it's nothing innovative about it at this point in time. But when we did it, hardly anyone else was doing it in that way, and a lot of people copied us from that.
All right, let's just finish up by talking about tools. You mentioned I think one tool for product design. Do you have a couple of others that you recommend, or tools, or books, or resources for getting products right?
So I think I talked about search presentations on SlideShare. That's what I own. That's what I do. I honestly, I go to SlideShare and get inspired by it and look at. There's so many great designers who put up. If you're interested in game design, then Amy Jo Kim, and there's some other great game design presentations. What do I read in terms of design? Design is something that to me at this point in time really comes from deeply within. I read the game stuff, I read the Eric Ries stuff, which I don't know, but I don't read a whole lot about design. So I'm not the right person to recommend design resources to you. Sales, you talked about sales. So that's something I have learned and I've come to really enjoy.
Oh,
And I've
how?
kind
What have you
of,
learned?
what have I learned? I've learned that it is, if somebody is paying money for the thing that you have built, it's really the ultimate compliment for your product. People will sit and use your product for free, but if people are paying for it, that's really saying that we have succeeded. So I've really learned to value that and to build for that. And I would say that's the thing that I have enjoyed getting into the most in the past year.
And you've got two different products where people can pay for them, right? You've
Well, actually, we have more, but some of them are under very closed beta, so you don't know about
I
them.
see, okay. So this has now become a bigger portion of the business to move towards selling premium services.
Yes, and we also not, we don't just have that, by the way. We also have we also work on these large social campaigns and advertising. So we have done large campaigns with Microsoft, with Adobe. So I'm not the direct person selling that, but I manage that whole thing. So that's another part of the selling that is interesting and fun.
I see, selling them within sponsorship within the site.
Correct. So
Okay.
basically, SlideShare is used by individuals and small companies. And like every other site on the web, there's a lot of large brands that want to also engage with the community on SlideShare. And we are slowly, we've helped build this up for a few brands in different ways. How to make them an integral part of the site so that they can engage with the community. At the same time, it's an authentic experience for the end users. And those projects have been really fun to work on.
What about this? You mentioned Eric Ries a few times in this interview. I saw that he had, for his conference, he had his video up on SlideShare. Why would somebody have a video up on SlideShare instead of a slide or instead of just slides or instead of using YouTube or another service for videos or Wistia?
Absolutely a great question to ask. Why did we enable videos? For a few reasons. First of all, there's a lot of presentation. So we define ourselves not by PowerPoint, but by presentations. And presentation at this point in time are ways of presenting yourself on the web. So we really, that's how we define ourselves. There's a lot of presentations that are videos. I mean, all the TED videos, there's so many presentations, a lot of I'm sure if you've given a talk, there's a slide and there's a video. And a lot of you, our users kept on asking us that, where should I put the videos? Because everybody's consolidated their slides and SlideShare, but their videos are spread all across the web. And what we started doing is we have these branded channels and we want to give them one place to put it all together, where you can then ask other people to visit you. So the idea is not that Eric Ries will only have his videos up there, but that he'll have both together in
I
one
see.
place. So that's really the point.
Okay. All right. Well, let's leave it there. I've got other questions, but I always have other questions. Hopefully, you'll come back and we'll do another interview in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thanks for coming here and doing this interview. Thank you guys all for watching, and I'll see you on the site.